Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Poppin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University, the Arizona Department of Education, or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All right, here we are another week, and we're a little worried about another little weather pattern coming through. We've got the byproduct of what's coming up for the Gulf, but boy, nothing like what our friends in New Orleans must be experiencing. I can't believe reading today that the entire power went out citywide. That sounds scary. So hopefully everyone's all right and things come back to normal soon.
Yeah, it's got to be really tough. We hope, you know, some of our guests have, you know, been from New Orleans and hope they're doing well. I'm sure they're planning, bracing. So, you know, we just wish them well and hope everything's going to be okay down there and safe and secure. So we'll keep an eye out for them and send them, obviously, our thoughts.
Yeah, definitely. I know we've talked weather, and it just really puts in perspective how intense things can be, things like this. So
yeah, it's tough, but, you know, they plan well and they usually execute well as well. So who's our guest today, Chris? Who do we got?
So Karen Lightman, which I don't believe either of us have met, but this is really what's great about the show is our guests open doors to other guests. So Artie Tenon, who was a guest a while back, people loved her episode. So I'm sure her recommendation of Karen would be a great one. She's with the City Metro of Metro 21 of Carnegie Mellon, and awesome. Yeah, she's got a great pedigree. I'm excited because she actually has a semiconductor background, which is interesting. We don't have someone that comes from that kind of more technical policy side. So we'll see kind of how that influences things. But Carnegie Mellon's always doing great things. Pittsburgh, we know we've had a guest from Pittsburgh, Grant, on before. So we'll see where it goes. Anything else to add on that?
No, I'm excited to speak with her. I mean, anyone that's a friend of Artie's is usually really great. So I'm excited to meet her. It'll be a great conversation to have. And I just wish we could have been doing this in person in Atlanta, but I'm sure.
Yeah, I know. We were so close.
soon. Should we get her in here?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
All right, Karen, please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. We always like to start with about the person. We just found our audience likes to know who's here, and so just tell a little bit about yourself. You know, what do you want our audience to know about your background? And we'll obviously get to what you're doing currently soon. But like, let's kind of lead up to that. Give us some context.
Yeah. So I'm currently at Carnegie Mellon University, but a lot of my paths keep coming back to Carnegie Mellon University since I graduated with a master's in public policy and management. And my focus has really been on how to use technology as a tool for helping improve quality of life, whether that be in community and economic development or financing or lending or building the supply chain for the MEMS, which is micro electromechanical systems for you non-engineers, and sensors and semiconductor industry. So I've always been like with MEMS and sensors, like really, how do you build industry out of a technology? How do you monetize the gee whiz of a technology, but monetize it because you understand the market and also you're solving a real world problem. So the work that we do at Metro 21 is we take the expertise of Carnegie Mellon University, which is very you know, amazing and stuff. Like, we invented artificial intelligence and robots everywhere. But, you know, we also understand that not everything we do applies to the world's problems, which are many. So how do we work in that sweet spot of taking technology, researching, developing, and deploying RD&D to help solve real world problems? And so that's my role, is to be that connector, liaison, and facilitator to connect the faculty with our municipal and equity partners throughout Southwestern Pennsylvania. And we're here based in Pittsburgh, PA.
And notice you've got like this board of all these faculty members that probably have a tie to what you're doing. So that's kind of how you rank, you keep that connection, and then you find opportunity and fit to the connection, or vice versa. Okay.
And yeah, and money is always an amazing organizer, right?
Like, are you the rainmaker the foundations are looking for, or is the faculty the rainmaker?
It's a combination, right? Because like, you can find rain anywhere, right? If you look in the right places. Maybe not in Tempe, Arizona right now.
Oh, you'd be surprised. We got dumped on. It was ugly. Week, months worth, and more is coming, but yes.
The idea is that looking for opportunities, looking for, it has to meet the faculty interest and there, and it's got to be novel technology, right? So it's not an evaluation role, the evaluation is like a dirty word. Like, nobody wants to be an evaluator. They want to be an innovator. But at the same time, it's got to be focused on innovating for a solution that's a real world problem. And then the other piece of it is we have municipal and equity partners to ensure that they're the real world, and you have this collaborative iterative partnership so that what you're proposing in your lab has a real world application. It isn't just, you know, kind of fanciful stuff.
That's awesome. I love that aspect of making sure it's real world applicable, not just a lab experiment. That's great. So, you know, Karen, this is kind of our, I guess, funniest question that we always ask our audience, because there is never the right answer to it. But it's a Smart Cities podcast, so we always ask our guests, you know, what is your vision of a smart city? What's the definition of a smart city to you? What's working, what's not working? Give us a little bit of a background on what you kind of consider a smart city.
Yeah, so this is kind of a concept that I've been bantering about, is the idea of a smart city. How can you have a smart city if you have food insecurity? How can you have a smart city if you have homelessness? How can you have a smart city if there's no mobility connectivity, if there's no broadband, ubiquitous broadband? So I think that's some of these core issues that are in both, and it's regional, right? It's cities, but it's also the suburbs and the rural communities in many ways. So that's what I want to focus on, is how are you using your smart connectivity to help solve these endemic issues that affect, you know, a big chunk of the population and have impact, reverberating impact, like broadband, for example. Like, yeah, I have great broadband and I can get, you know, Comcast out here to get me, you know, I can spend a lot of money and get more, you know, mesh grids or whatever, mesh networks, but most folks can't, right? And if there's no layer of broadband, it doesn't matter, you know, how many mesh networks you have, if there isn't that backbone fiber. So you can only be as smart as your infrastructure is. And so that's why, that's what, you know, we're doing a lot on broadband. We're doing a lot on connectivity. I think this idea of how do you ensure that, like, there's this legacy of the zip codes, this Harvard study that showed that the zip code that you're born into will determine your future outcomes. Well, like, how messed up is that? Like, right. That ain't the American dream, right? So how do we break that curse of the zip code? And you do it by mobility, and it's mobility and connectivity. Broadband, internet connectivity is another way to have mobility, economic mobility, physical mobility, socioeconomic mobility. So that's what I want to talk about in a smart city, is that it's equitable, inclusive, sustainable, diverse, you know, like, all those things are super important. And sure, you can have a lot of like awesome sensors and you can have IoT networks everywhere. And that's great. But if you don't have this like backbone of infrastructure, social infrastructure and physical infrastructure, you're not, it's not, you know, good luck.
Yep. Yep. Oh, completely agree. I think Chris and I would both completely agree with that definition. And so you're right. There has been, unfortunately, with smart cities, a lot of hype, a lot of misunderstanding, you know, when it comes to this concept of developing smart cities. But you're right. It's when you drill down, a lot of it revolves around the broadband, the connectivity, and ensuring everyone has access and it's equitable for all of us. And so in your work, Karen, have you seen any good examples of cities kind of really moving the needle forward in this space? Are there any good projects that you want to kind of highlight for our audience?
I mean, obviously, I'd love to talk about Pittsburgh. And I think what we've done, and you know, you guys in Arizona, in Tempe, the interface with autonomous vehicle companies, you know, and, you know, I will say that, you know, we kind of invented it here in Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon University and the Robotics Institute. We've been doing this for 30 plus years. We have, I don't know what the count, I've lost count. It's at least 12 autonomous vehicle companies working in around the city of Pittsburgh. And we're looking to how do you, it's not just autonomous, but it's connected, autonomous and electric. Like this idea of supply and demand for goods and people, last mile, first mile, all these challenges. And what's cool about the city of Pittsburgh is that because of the collaboration and partnership that we have, is that we have something called the Pittsburgh Principles, whereby we've come together and drawn up kind of an agreement, a gentleman's agreement or gentlewoman's agreement between all those doing autonomous vehicles, so to have some transparency about what, you know, what safety and ensure that, because trust is so important. Like when we do deploy these connected autonomous vehicles, the interplay and connectivity with the people who walk the streets is going to be really important. So what we're doing is we have these close collaborations with our partners so that we can help, have new policies, and that we can also inform legislatures, both at the local, state, and federal level, so that their policies reflect that. So that's a lot of what I'm really proud of, is that we're demonstrating that autonomous vehicles, connected autonomous vehicles work. Like we're doing it with the intersection with, you know, infrastructure and traffic signalization and buses and bikes and pedestrians and connected vehicles. We're doing all that, but that's great if you're doing that like in your tiny little, you know, microcosm lab or maybe a city block. Good, that's great. But if you want to have something bigger, like we're doing something with several states, and it's the and it's this idea of connecting. I think it's Pennsylvania. Oh gosh. And now I'm completely forgetting the name, but I'll have to go back to that. But it's like this smart mobility between Michigan to Philadelphia. So like Ohio, Michigan and Pennsylvania. So that when you're going to, because you don't want to do things in isolation, but you need to make sure that the smart mobility is connecting all of those regions, and they're not doing it like everybody has their own little silo. And that's a lot of what we've been really doing a good job of, is, you know, using data, using information to break down those silos.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, when it comes to this emerging technology, collaboration, partnerships are going to be so imperative, because you're right. I mean, these technologies, they obviously cross municipal boundaries, state boundaries, jurisdictional boundaries. And so if we're really going to see these technologies at scale, we're going to have to work together. So maybe talk to us about the importance of partnerships in your mind. Is a lot of your work revolve around building these sorts of partnerships? I mean, how might others in maybe different areas of the country, you know, establish a similar organization to help really drive impact in their communities? Talk to us about maybe partnerships.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is really core. So the predecessor, Traffic 21, that's focused on mobility and traffic. And they've been doing this for close to 12 years. And then it was a realization that if you're going to do these deployments, you need to be doing it in collaboration with your municipality. And so we have these memos of understanding that we have, I think we have six now. So we're very strategic. Like Metro 21 has been around for 5 years, and we don't you know, throw in MOUs with everybody willy-nilly, but it's like very strategic partnership and collaboration. And it, you also dedicate, so the partner, say with the city of Pittsburgh, they dedicate a staff person that I meet with monthly. And then we have a commitment to collaboration, open transparency. We share a Google Doc of projects that we're working on, proposals that we're working on, ideas for the future, capstones. And so we have that transparent collaboration so that when it's time to go around for a proposal, for a concept, they're already familiar with what we're doing. I'm making those connections. I'm working with community groups. So it has that, it's a commitment of staff and people and data. And so we have that with the city, the county of Allegheny, which is really 130 municipalities large here. And then we have it with the Pittsburgh Airport Authority, and they're in the process of doing a $1.1 billion renovation. They're going to be the first post-COVID airport to reopen, which should be happening in 2023. And then we have a collaboration with the Pittsburgh Water and Sewer Authority, because aged infrastructure is so critical. And as you saw with the infrastructure bill, a lot of that's going to be on water and sewer issues. And like, we have a lot of like storm water overflow, which may not be the issue in Arizona, unless you have those torrential rains, right? So you have, so this infrastructure is really critical. And then lastly, our last MOU is with the Regional Industrial Development Corporation, RIDC. So they have, in the 11 county region, they have industrial parks. And so the idea is that we're capitalizing and commercializing technology, and then we're spawning new companies. So that's the other piece of it too, is that Metro 21 alone has launched 6 startup companies in varying levels of success. One of them is Motional, which is a AV partnership between Aptiv and Hyundai that's valued at $4 billion. And their headquarters, I think one of them is in Las Vegas or that out there somewhere. And then the other one is here in Pittsburgh. And so that's the exciting thing, is that we show the realm of the possible. We do a demonstration project with our partners, and then a company is formed, right? Because we've shown that it can be done. And then we have these collaborations with the industrial parks so that they can, you know, have a place to do their work. And so I think that's, I mean, there's never a perfect recipe that you can like cut and paste and copy to another region. But that being said, we're also part, and we started a national network called the Metro Lab Network. And they're a DC-based organization. It's a group of about 30-plus universities and municipalities with this commitment. And like Georgia Tech has, you know, a collaboration with the state of Georgia. We're Syracuse, like all over the place. I don't know about Arizona. Like that would be like a welcome. Like you're all welcome to come. and because the models are always different, right? And they're very. But it's this idea of more applied research to solve real world problems in collaboration with municipalities. And for us, it's all about innovation, entrepreneurship as well.
That's great. Have you run across one of our other guests from City of Pittsburgh? Do you know Grant Irvin?
Oh my gosh, yeah. We were just on a panel hosted by Congressman Doyle, where he hosted a broadband roundtable for the Deputy Secretary of Commerce, Don Graves. And so Grant spoke to sustainability and the work that the city is focused on, and how that's broadband great. Can help enable that.
So those listening that have listened to both have now seen both perspectives of how the city can work with the university and vice versa. Because he kind of said similar. He's very blessed to have such a tight university network in Pittsburgh that he can work with, and he kind of talked from the other angle. That's great. Another thing that's been a theme many of our guests talk about is data, and we're just curious if there's unique ways you've seen how Metro 21 helps organize, how CMU brings that out, how cities are bringing that out. Like what works and what doesn't? Everyone talks about how important it is, but there's not one size fits all, and there's probably better ways to do it. You've even talked about the centralization of public data. So if you want to go that direction, we'd love to hear it too.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of centralization of anything. I think the because I think you lose. I like decentralized, autonomous. Like that's where I think it should be, but informed by the collective. Like I think that's what's cool because you need to be thinking about issues of trust and privacy and security. So if everything's centralized, like any good. So it's the idea that you have the silos of information that are, you know, like maybe gathered by edge computing, but it's done in a way that it's safe and secure and that the information can be used to inform the collective, right? But then like a traffic signal, for example, a traffic signal at an intersection is, we have, it's called SureTrack, Scalable Urban Traffic Control, where data of, you know, cars and pedestrians and bikers, and that intersection is being managed, and then it's helping inform intersections in its vicinity, but there's nobody behind a central, like Star Trek, like saying, oh, well, I'm gonna mess with this intersection and I'm gonna take it down. So it's not vulnerable to hackers. And I think that's really important. And then at the same time, it's machine learning. So it's always improving that intersection and it's informing the other intersection. So that's what I think of as data. And so I'll give you an example of a project So a project that we did with the public safety department and specifically the Bureau of Fire. So they were concerned that there was over, I think it's like 6,000 public buildings in the city of Pittsburgh and they have 5 inspectors. And so the issue is they need to be able to inspect 5,000 buildings at least once every 5 years. And the challenge is which ones are more at risk of fire? Which ones should we go to first? Which ones are okay? And so the city came to us with that problem and said, we have some repositories of information. Some of it's digital, some of it's not.
Hire another inspector.
No inspectors lost their jobs. I think that's the part I want to get to, is that we created this algorithm that pulled information that was already available, like, you know, 311 calls, like other kind of calls of fires, past inspections, building permits, all of these indicators, and figured out what were the best indicators of a fire. And so the inspectors could then they run a report, and we also co-created it with them. So we did this the fire department that has, of course, a Carnegie Mellon grad who, and the Department of Innovation Performance was helping collate this information and putting it into an algorithm that then can inform and help the inspectors determine which buildings were most at risk for a fire within 1 year. And so it went basically from zero accuracy to 86% accuracy once they put in this tool. And I think that's a great example of there were all these silos of information, but none of it was talking to each other. But what we did is we figured out which pieces needed to, you know, were correlated and collated, and did it in an equitable way. So it was the entire, you know, the entire system. It wasn't just like certain neighborhoods, right? And so, you know, but the challenge is once you have that information, then you need to ensure that the building inspectors use it
update whether it was accurate. Like they kind of see it differently, right, when they get out there, whether it was kind of like whether there was something about what sent them to that site that might not have been accurate that could help tweak the model.
That iterative collaboration is super important. And with this, it's like basically this became like open source. Like, and I think that's what's neat about a lot of the work that we do is this was done by a student who's now left. He's graduated with his PhD and he's at Microsoft, I believe. He wanted this to be open source so that it could be used by.
He didn't want the $4 billion valuation for his company?
No, he didn't. He was like, he developed it actually when he was at Georgia Tech and in undergrad. And then he came to Carnegie Mellon for his PhD. And he's worked with fire departments across the country. And now it's open source software. So I think that's a great example of, and it's truly saving lives.
That's awesome.
So I'm not a I'm not a fan of centralized. I'm a fan of important dashboard data. Like, I think that's really important so you can make investment decisions. But I'm not a fan of centralized.
Well,
I worry
sometimes you misinterpret something and you ask it the right way. It brings out the best answer. This is great.
Okay.
No, no, it seemed like there was a talk about it, but you're probably talking about the opposite of it. And I misread. So I'm curious, before we ask our final question, I looked at your website. There are so many areas you're focused. You talked about how you look at smart cities differently. Are there any other stories you want to highlight? I mean, all the ones you've told us have amazing outcomes. They're all.
I'll tell you my favorite. It's COVID related, because this issue sort of goes back to my first comment about how do you define a smart city. Food insecurity, right? And so, and it's tied to education too, Chris. So we were starting a project on transporting non-public school kids to optimize the delivery of kids in this 130 municipality region. And we started going down this, that we got the project started February of 2020. And so quickly soon after, by April, it was clear that the fourth of this one municipality, right, the largest municipality outside of the city of Pittsburgh, 4,000 school kids that all were eligible for free breakfast and lunch, okay? The entire 4,000 kids eligible for free breakfast and lunch. They had grab-and-go locations at the middle school. 25 meals were being picked up. So we knew from working, from hearing our allies at Allies for Children, a nonprofit that is an advocate for children, and working with the school districts, that there was a gap. And the issue was people don't have access to transportation reliably, and they were maybe housebound, or they were working from home, and their kids could not get to, you know, the 4 mile trek to pick up free meals. So what we did is we took that same idea of an optimized route algorithm to basically design several routes to within a quarter mile of where the kids live. And we worked with many partners to get the food, the meals, and as well as the transportation, and also volunteers to help spread the word. And we expanded this to not only the Penn Hills community, but also McKeesport and McKees Rocks, which are like big, like communities that were just devastated by the exit of the steel economy in the 80s and still haven't recovered. Okay. So these are like low income communities. Nobody has access to cars, you know, a vast majority don't. So we developed routes, working with community groups, working with church groups, working with other nonprofits, and we helped deliver over 110,000 meals during the pandemic. And that was great. And then we got the kids back to school, and you know, it was part of that community building that was so critical. Like, the drivers wrote us thank you notes because they loved feeling like they were giving back to their communities. So it was absolutely, and what was cool at its core is artificial intelligence. So it's this algorithm that is being formed by these and dynamic issues of how many meals, how many kids, how many stops, how many buses, like all of that changing all the time, which kids, how many kids are going back to hybrid, how many kids are staying home. Like, it was week to week. It was a dynamic algorithm, and it was so much fun, really rewarding. So I would say that's my favorite story.
That's so cool.
As I've heard you talk, there's one thing I'm interested in that I don't think that kind of changes. Having the tie to DC and also kind of with your big focus on not necessarily tech but just these big meaty problems, is there anything you're doing uniquely to try to get infrastructure funds? Maybe that would be something I bet our guests would love to hear. Is there anything that you can share there?
I'm not going to tell you exactly anything because this is extremely competitive, as you can imagine, but this issue of broadband is really critical. And I would say, so, you know, looking at broadband, looking at autonomous vehicles, looking at infrastructure, looking at transportation, mobility, and all with an equity lens is something that we're looking at. So I think that's what's really exciting is with the Biden.
But it seems like that's the intent. It's almost like the government realizes there's so many pockets of those that are missing out, and COVID really exposed that. So it's almost like they want everyone to win in this, but it's not clear how, what differentiators are going to happen, how that all happen, you know. So I can see why you'd want to keep some things close.
Yeah. And I think the challenge is going to be the money, and for infrastructure, a lot of it's going to be given to the states. Right. And yeah, so right. Each state, and we have a very, we're a purple state. I don't know if Arizona is also, but you got some, you know, got some pockets of red, some pockets of blue. We have, you know, it's like blue dumbbells and a whole bunch of red in the middle. And so it's a complication because our state legislature is dominated Republican. Our governor is Democrat. So there's, you know, there's going to be challenges, and, you know, it's politics, unfortunately. So the good news is that at least here in Pennsylvania, like we're working on a 10 county initiative to help inform broadband decisions. And we're also working closely with the state to better inform like where the gaps are, how you're going to fill it, how you're going to future-proof that technology. And then once you have that, what can you do with it? How can you spawn economic development? How can you, you know, help with telemedicine? How can you help, like, where are the areas where we can really, you know, again, like break that zip code curse? So I would say my focus has mainly been on broadband infrastructure, but I have colleagues who are working very closely on, you know, just pure mobility issues because at the also related to climate, right? So it's this idea that how do you reduce greenhouse gas emissions from buildings as well as from vehicles? So electrification, the grid, all that stuff, like big fan, of the grid.
Yeah. So there's the part of bringing everyone up to a common place, but then there's also how do we innovate our way through to solve some of the biggest challenges? So that's great. Yeah. We were hoping we'd get some time. I know we all kind of, or at least you and I met through a mutual friend. We were supposed to be out in Smart City Expo Atlanta. Know. That's bummer. Yeah. Back at close. I know already very disappointed, but we do ask one final question of our guests is just, we know you can't do these things alone. Is there anyone that you've been particularly appreciative? You want to call out on the show and for our sake, do you think knowing us and what the Urban Complex is about, do you think they'd be a good fit for a future guest? That was a win-win too. So,
yeah. So I would say my colleague at the Department of Mobility and Infrastructure, Karina Ricks, she's the director. She's been a great champion and partner and is willing to make the tough calls. And she came from DC. She worked in the Department of Planning, I believe, and is a big transportation person. She's originally from Michigan.
Now, or she's still with
She's currently with the city of Pittsburgh at the Department of Mobility and Infrastructure.
City. Oh, great.
So I would I know you already had Grant from the city of Pittsburgh, but I would do a shout out to Karina because she also has a really good global view. Like a project that I didn't even mention is a one we're doing on mobility as a service. So we've been partnering with them with this idea of, you know, like, I think it's like 40% of Pittsburghers don't have access to reliable transportation. Awesome. So it, you know, with infrastructure, we have a very hilly city. So like what can be done to have intermodal, multimodal options? And we're also doing a mobility study with the city of Pittsburgh on what you call universal basic mobility, right? Yeah. So you've heard of universal basic income. And the concept of universal basic mobility is that everybody should have a right to basic mobility. And so how do we use technology and data to help optimize that? So it's a combination of zip cars and scooters and bikes and, you know, Ubers and, you know, all those things. So she's a great champion. She'll talk your ear off. She's a good person. So I'm happy to make the introduction, and I highly recommend.
That'd be great. Well, thank you. All right. Well, with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Karen Lightman, Executive Director of Carnegie Mellon's Metro 21. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
The Greater Phoenix Economic Council, known as GPEC, was named the top economic development organization in the U.S. in 2020. As a data-driven regional organization, GPEC serves as a strategic partner to companies across the world as they expand or relocate to other markets. Over the past 31 years, GPEC has fueled the Greater Phoenix economy by helping more than 850 companies and creating more than 154,000 jobs. Leaders in Greater Phoenix are building the nation's most innovative and connected smart region through The Connective. This community-driven applied research model deploys technology at scale. For more information about GPEC, visit gpec.org.
All right, Dom. So that was Karen. What'd you think?
Yeah, she was awesome. We knew any recommendation from Artie, she was going to be great. And she was great. What a fantastic conversation. I love this idea. What did she mention? How did she put it? She said, you know, you can only be as smart as your infrastructure. And I thought that really just hit home, especially because it sounds like similar to her. A lot of what I'm working on now is all around connectivity, ensuring everyone has access, broadband expansion. But it really just put it in a new way to kind of the way that she termed it. You know, you can only be as smart as your infrastructure. It's so true because you really need to plan for that, because once you have that, that's your backbone. That's what you can build everything off of. And so you
how to build it. Right. But it also wasn't the tech infrastructure, which is where people go. She actually made the caveat after she kind of laid out, you're right, like one of the better ways it's been said, not just the tagline, but actually the mechanism by doing it. She said, and it's not just physical infrastructure, it's also your social infrastructure. So the ways by which you engage, the ways by which you operate, how you bring people in, how you get feedback. Exactly. I think that's really important. That's where we're seeing a lot of the themes on the show lately. It's not so focused on infrastructure, nor is it necessarily called social infrastructure, but that's where people are focused on, is that voice of the resident or the multi-partner collaboration. I know you cued in on that too. So it's a great point.
Yeah. I just love what she has going on over there at Carnegie Mellon. I think the way, you know, they leverage the power of the university and the partnerships to help solve real world challenges was exciting. What did you think about anything stand out for you?
Well, for sure. You know, you hear about Carnegie Mellon, you know, the deep research, the robotics, the autonomous vehicle work, she mentioned the birth of artificial intelligence. So they definitely have, they don't know a thing or two about data. I thought with the direct application where you were talking about the partnerships and she dug into the public safety example. I thought that was awesome. Oh. Like, so here you've got this problem where there's no physical way five inspectors are going to inspect, 1,000 buildings a year. I guess it'd be about 1,300 buildings a year in whatever the frequency was. I think it was 3 years that they had to do it, 5 years or something. And so they kind of look to see, all right, can we find some way to create a susceptibility algorithm and then prioritize the work for the inspectors so they were being as effective as possible across what they're doing. And, you know, they're pulling in data that was already public, some shared stuff, doing iterative advances on it. I just thought that was a great example. And she said they got to like way better effectiveness rate, something on the 80% I heard her say. And hopefully that equates to less fires and less cost, not only from running the program, but actually in terms of administering. You get ahead of stuff. We all know once the problem's already happened, that's way more expensive to fix than if, say, the inspection found something, they handled it and got ahead of it before it did serious damage.
Yeah. So, I mean, such an awesome example. Then what I love that they made it open source. Right? So that way others can use it. I mean, that's just brilliant. I absolutely love it. I think that was such a good example of one, solving a real world challenge through partnerships, leveraging data, leveraging the, like you mentioned, the pedigree that is Carnegie Mellon and the background of data and AI to just help solve a real world challenge for a city. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah, same with the food one. I mean, that's amazing. About those healthy food trucks that get to places to fill it in. But like, wow, it sounds like they were seeing that it was like 4 miles for many families to get to where the food was going based on the old model. And they found a way to route buses and leverage volunteers and get where their goal was to, no one had to go further than a quarter mile to get this food that they were expecting or that was available. And I think she said 100,000 meals delivered in times. I know I saw some of our food banks during the times of right when COVID was really getting deep, like there was lines around the corner. So clearly, if you can optimize and get it to where the people are, as opposed to making them come, you're probably going to be way more effective. It's a great story.
Yeah, so awesome. What about cracks in the pavement for this week?
Yeah, let me bring up, found one that will be interesting. She did talk about homelessness on one of the, her big areas they're focused on. The title is DC Flexible, so District of Columbia, Flexible Housing Subsidy Shows Promise for Addressing Homelessness. And my take on this, it's interesting. It's like giving choice to the one that is having the homelessness issue, or at least home insecurity, and giving them a pool of money, but much more options. And so they can decide, do they need it all at once? But it's only allowed for certain things like rent, or can they spread it out for a load? It's almost like, it's almost meant to give them choice, find the right thing for them, and put the onus on the individual or the family. But often they know what's best, right? But if you only give them one rigid solution, it forces them into something that may not be optimal. So hopefully this works. And it said something like 88% of participants remained in stable housing and recertified for a second year with the program.
Wow. So
talk about something that's unique. I'm sure there's a data element. There's a delivery element of the funds. There's probably a monitoring element. A lot to it. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think this is going to be, I mean, this is what's so exciting about, again, having these kind of laboratories for testing new policy and new programs. I think it mentions a lot. It's still early on, and they're still waiting for more data to come in to really prove the effectiveness of the program. But it's saying that it's very promising, to your point, of the results they're seeing so far. And so I think this is going to be a very exciting development if it continues to be successful. But yeah, I think.
And you know, if you were in the shoes where your housing was a little bit not, you didn't know exactly where you were going to be.
Yeah.
You'd still rather be in control of the decisions you're making for your particular situation. I think that's what's important. I know the state of Arizona has done a lot for the consumer of education to have a lot of choice. And it creates a little chaos when you can go to any charter school or to go to any public school.
Yeah.
But as things settle, you get the right fit or the right family, and it makes sense. And so I think that's what they're trying to do here. They put these funds in these accounts only used for specific purposes. And we'll see. We'll have to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, great article from Smart Cities Dive. This is perfect. Good stuff.
All right. Until next time. That's a wrap, all. Thanks.
Hey, thanks, everyone. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Until next time.